CSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
What a cool experience.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media. CSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am your guest host, David Minuk, joined in studio by Michael Remus and guest analyst, Darren Bauming. We have an action-packed show for you guys today. 3 hours of Stanley Cup playoff action to discuss. There was a ton going on, lots to discuss. What do you guys think so far? What's your highlight right now of the last week?
It's been a great first round, most definitely. I've been entertained pretty much every night of the week. You can't hate this playoff hockey. Every game you flip to, you're going to get entertained.
You know, the thing about the Stanley Cup playoffs is it's a celebration. It's hockey every night. There's too many games on for me to watch. It's very hard for me to keep track. I need more TVs in my house.
Well, just to let you guys know, we have three guests on the show today. We have Matt Laughlin from he's a New Jersey Devils play-by-play guy. We also have James Gordon, the sports editor of the Ottawa Citizen, and Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who is the Blues beat writer. And they're going to be on to discuss this respective series. And you know what? Probably the breaking news right now that was reported this morning was that Rafi Torres is going to get 25 games for his hit on Marian Hossa. Michael, what's your thoughts on that?
You know, 25 games, they had to throw the book at this guy. They had to make an example. You know, the playoffs were getting out of control for the first few games. You know, every whistle, there'd be some kind of face washing, some eye gouging, hair pulling.
Some stick work.
It was getting too much. And, you know, the last few nights, you know, I'm kind of shocked there hasn't been a suspension the last few nights of playoff hockey. But Torres, he's got a track record. They need to make an example of him, and they did.
My thoughts on this are kind of twofold. First of all, the 25-game suspension, if Phoenix somehow makes it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, they needed to cover all their bases to make sure he didn't play another game in the postseason. And it also covers their bases in, you know, monetarily penalizing him, because he's going to drop, you know, roughly $26,000 for every regular season game he misses as well. So, you know, for his sake, in my opinion, I hope he misses a lot of regular season games and gets hit in his pocketbook as well.
To clarify the NHL's position, we have Brendan Shanahan dropping his Shanahan ban on Rafi Torres.
I'm Brendan Shanahan of the National Hockey League's Department of Player Safety. Tuesday night in Chicago, an incident occurred in a game between the Blackhawks and the Phoenix Coyotes.
At 11:42 of the first period, Phoenix forward Rafi Torres launched himself to deliver a late, direct hit to the head of Chicago forward Marian Hossa. As the video shows, after the puck is poked off Hossa's stick, he turns toward the middle of the ice. As Hossa turns to recover the loose puck, Torres skates into the picture. It is clear that he sees Hossa is no longer in possession of the puck because Torres takes a one-handed swipe at it with his stick. Torres then leaps into the air and drives his left shoulder into Hossa's head. This is a violation of three NHL rules: interference, charging, and illegal check to the head.
And that is, you know, Brendan Shanahan talking about why the Phoenix Coyotes, Rafi Torres, won't be playing for the next 25 games. And you know what? They had to throw the book at him. They had to do something because the NHL has been so inconsistent these playoffs. You know, I mean, from Shea Weber's non-suspension to now Rafi Torres, you got two ends of the spectrum. And really, they needed to do something. They wanted to show the players that they are going to be enforcing serious, significant penalties if you are causing this type of damage to players' heads. You just can't do it. It's not acceptable. I mean, there's one thing to be saying about it's a hockey play, you're finishing a check, but the reality was he was in a vulnerable position. He didn't have the puck anymore. It's tough, but the problem is the history of Torres. You know, that's where they really go back and they say, what happened to Rafi Torres? Let's look at his history. And unfortunately for him, he's got a bad history. So they basically said to him, you know what, you've got to pay. And it's really, like I said, it's more just about sending a message to the rest of the NHL. They're not going to play around. There's been more suspensions in the first round than there were all of last playoffs.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy.
Well, more suspensions than ever in an entire playoff.
Right.
So I think, you know, the NHL heard all the talk around the league that Shea Weber only getting fined $2,500 really set a precedent, and I think they wanted to make sure that they let people know that they're not being this lenient on violence in the games. And putting a suspension like this on a repeat offender like Rafi Torres, I think, was completely necessary. Completely.
You know, I appreciate Shanahan's explanation. He knew that Hossa didn't have the puck anymore by how he swiped at it and went for the hit anyway. So good for Shanahan.
All right. Well, you know what? As much as we want to, we could spend an entire segment talking just about suspensions. There has been some excellent Stanley Cup games. What was your highlight game in the last couple of days? I mean, there's been so many, but what for you, Darren, stood out?
Well, I can't get enough of this Battle of Pennsylvania, this Philly-Pittsburgh series. I think, obviously, that 10-3 game was tough to watch after the first two periods. I had to switch back to CBC and watch the other game. But, you know, the game last night, the 3-2 win for the Pittsburgh Penguins, I was so happy to see Marc-Andre Fleury return to form. He came out of the regular season with so much momentum. He was playing consistent hockey, and I thought he was going to be that X factor in that series. And then, you know, he started playing absolutely terrible, you know, letting 8 goals in games 2 and 3 each. But he definitely returned to form, made some big saves last night, and hopefully, you know, this game, they can get it to go to game 7 yet.
You know, the thing about Marc-Andre Fleury, he's always been an elite goaltender. You know, he could be a contender for Canada's Olympic team in Sochi, Russia. But I remember Marc-Andre Fleury, that save he made in Lindstrom to steal the Stanley Cup. And that's, you know, the saves that he was making yesterday. You know, Scott Hartnell, Danny Briere patting the puck away. And Marc-Andre Fleury, he's like, now he's realized that he has the power and he's figuring out how to harness it. But I think one of the highlight games for me of the Stanley Cup playoffs so far, last Saturday's Ottawa Rangers game, I honestly think, while it was kind of ridiculous with the whole Matt Carkner, Brian Boyle thing, it was almost like a cartoon of hockey, but I think the Senators had to pick up the intensity, had to show the Rangers that they were equally as tough as them, and they proved it that game, winning with a Chris Neal goal in overtime and then coming back the other night to tie the series.
You know, the problem is that I'm with you guys. I don't think I can put my finger on any one particular game and say that game is my favorite game, because every single game, whether it go to overtime or finish in 60 minutes, has been fantastic. There's really, you just have to love playoff hockey. And yes, there's been a lot of shenanigans that have taken place this year for whatever reason, more than others. But, you know, I mean, the Chicago Phoenix series, I didn't think I'd be into it. Super, I'm loving it. Like, they've been fantastic games. Going to every 4 games going to overtime. I think it's last time that happened was like 1951 or something like that. It's been like 70 something years since a series has gone every game in the series went to overtime. And I think that was I was reading about it earlier. It was Montreal and Toronto in like 51 went every 5 game series. Montreal won and every game went to overtime. And this is the first time in like 70 something years. So it's interesting in the sense that it's as close as it is. And another series that I think Remus and I both accurately predicted that it'd be close was Boston and Washington. You went for Washington in the end, right?
No, I picked Boston.
Oh, did you pick Boston?
I didn't think it was going to be close. I thought Boston would kill them. You know, we saw Washington here a bunch of times and they really never looked that great. They didn't look that organized. Ovechkin didn't look as committed. But, I mean, when you're playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs for, you know, the ultimate goal, you know, different emotions, different, you know, there's different more incentive for you than in just, you know, some regular season game in mid-December.
I never saw too much strength in Washington. They weren't really a tough team. When you're matched up against a tough team like Boston, you know, you expect to see a little bit of grit, a little bit of sandpaper out of Washington. And I've been surprised, especially with their rookie goaltender in Holtby. He's played great. You know, all these games were essentially one-goal games. It shaped up to be a lot more entertaining series than I thought it would be.
Well, I called Washington early on, and someone said, I think, who was it, saying that you have to have your head examined if you were going with the Capitals. And I just said it would be a 7-game series. I didn't think that, you know, I didn't think they would dominate or anything like that, but I didn't think Boston was playing as consistently as they had. And so, and their power play has been terrible. So there was a chance that the Washington could knock them off, especially, you know, if you have Backstrom back, you have Semin playing well. I mean, well, we don't know what's going on with Ovechkin based on the fact that he only played a minute 58, I think, of the third period of that last game. But, you know, Washington has given them a chance. And like you said, the play of the young goaltender has really, you know, kind of galvanized the team. And he's been solid. And they've been able to kind of, you know, rest on that and move forward.
These are two really streaky teams throughout the regular season. They've each had their struggles for weeks at a time. And they've also, you know, excelled in for weeks at a time. You really didn't know what you were going to find in this series. I thought Boston was really going to run away with it, especially once Holtby came in. You never know with a young goaltender like that. But it seems like every year the playoffs has a storyline of a young goaltender that is emerging. And it'll be interesting to see if this young Canadian goaltender will be able to continue this play throughout the playoffs and the next season.
Well, we said coming to the playoffs that, you know, Washington and San Jose were those teams that were predicted, you know, to be good at the beginning of the season that didn't quite play, you know, live up to expectations. But, you know, they were kind of just, you know, biding their time for the playoffs. You know, they've done this before, done the regular season, and it kind of gets draining. They've really turned it up and brought their A game for this series.
Well, like I said, it's been extremely interesting. Now, which team do you think has disappointed the most? I mean, we've got, you know, you have Pittsburgh was down 3-0. You've got Chicago's now down 3-1. San Jose's down 3-1. So which team do you guys feel has really fallen flat the most during this postseason?
I think the obvious choice, it's obvious to everybody, is the Vancouver Canucks. The way they've come out in games against the Los Angeles Kings team that really struggled to score goals. When you've got two, you know, you could argue world-class goaltenders in Corey Schneider and Roberto Luongo, and you're going against a team like Los Angeles that struggled so much to put offense on the board throughout the year, the fact that they're leading this series 3-1 is surprised me. I think it surprised everybody.
I'm going to agree with Darren. Vancouver's really struggled in the series, and they've struggled to score. And the question is about Vancouver is they traded away Cody Hodgson for Zach Cassian. How valuable would he have been in the first few games when they were missing Daniel Sedin if they needed that extra scoring?
The only time I've seen Zach Cassian is sitting in the box. I haven't seen him done anything else in those games.
I think the people in Vancouver are saying trade Hodgson, or get back Hodgson, trade Luongo.
So of the teams that are currently sitting in a deficit position, who do you think is the most likely to, you know, send their series to seven games and possibly win it?
I think San Jose has a chance being down 3-1 to the Blues. The Blues play such a consistent defensive game that's going to be tough for them. But Chicago-Phoenix, with every game going to overtime, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, like they say, any given Sunday, any given hockey night in that series, whether it's in Phoenix or Chicago, you don't know who's going to come away with the win. Chicago always seems to score when they need to in those waning moments of the third. You can't count out Jonathan Taves and the Blackhawks.
Well, Pittsburgh's down 3-2 now, but they just need to win one game to send it to a Game 7 where anything can happen. But Vancouver down 3-1. They just got back Daniel Sedin. They're playing confident in front of Corey Schneider. You know, they won the President's Trophy. It wouldn't put it past them to take it to 7.
Well, we're going to end this segment there. We're going to talk some Ice Caps. They were victorious yesterday. So,
huge win.
Yeah, big win, 3-2. You're listening to the Elite Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Leave a Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're going to talk some Ice Caps hockey going to the East Coast. Ice Caps were, we're going to go down to New York first because they opted in the AHL. You have the chance that when you are playing a certain distance from your opponent, you have the chance, the team that's going to be the home team or the team with the better record has the option to opt out of playing the first two games at home.
Is that right?
And then you can play. So the Ice Caps decided to defer and play the first two games in New York and playing games 3, 4, and 5 in St. John's.
I didn't know that. That's a smart move by the Ice Caps.
Yeah, and based on the fact that they have a very good road record, it's probably a very good move. The Ice Caps, of course, were victorious 3-2 yesterday in New York, and the call by Brian Rogers on the game-winning goal is right here.
Maxwell will set it up for Jason King. Here's King stepping up. King lets it go. They score! Jason King fired it off of Aaron Gagnon. And with 1:22 left, the Ice Caps have taken a 3-2 lead. The King of Kings let it go. And I'm losing my mind and my voice. And there's 1:22 left in regulation time.
Well, it's not good that Brian Rogers is losing his voice because it's only game one. And the Caps are set for a long series, hopefully a long playoff run in the Calder. And you know what? This team has really had to kind of come together because they've had a lot of guys return from injury. And, you know, they're playing well. You know, they were a little inconsistent down the line. But, this has been a good team, and it's been, you know, a total team effort, as is evidenced by the score sheet.
You know, King of Kings, I like that call. You know, Moose fans might remember Jason King for his time here, you know, from 2002 to 2006. But I think the Ice Caps, you know, they were very successful in the regular season. They've got a lot of, I guess, fringe NHL talent. Ben Maxwell, who was here for a bit, chipped in with two assists. Spencer Mihajlovic, everyone knows him, had an assist yesterday. And Derek Meech with 2 points. You know, it would be, you know, the city hasn't had a championship in a while, but it would be a shame that, you know, once the Moose leave or AHL franchise leaves, they win a Calder Cup elsewhere.
Well, the one thing about that the Ice Caps have in their favor is that the True North ownership group definitely is desiring to win a Calder Cup. They want to win the championship. So they're not going to leave the cupboard bare, as you know, as the saying is, as many NHL teams do, and leave these guys high and dry. They're definitely, you know, aware of the fact that they're developing here in Winnipeg and that they're not going to just take them and just say, okay, you know what, we don't care what happens in St. John's. They're our development team. They clearly want to win a championship.
No, True North still owns this franchise. They've always said that they want to build from within. They want to build from the ground up. The cupboard was completely bare in Atlanta as far as their developmental system was. Their farm team was pretty much a mishmash of longtime veteran AHL players. There was no youth. There was no development happening there, and I think they're doing it the right way. True North is a profit-driven corporation like any proper corporation should be. They're trying to make it a successful franchise. St. John's has gone a long time without AHL hockey, without pro hockey in that city. They want a winner, and I think they've got one winning the Atlantic Division in their first season.
Yeah, when you talk about leaving the cover bear, one thing that was interesting that the St. Louis Blues did is they had goaltender Ben Bishop, who they were going to lose at the end of the season, and they traded him away. And now that Elliott and Halak are hurt, they don't have a proper backup that they could. But the point I'm trying to make is they traded away their AHL goaltender. Now their AHL franchise, may not have as good a chance as winning.
Well, what's interesting is that this Syracuse Crunch team, which didn't clinch a playoff spot till late in the season, they were hot. I mean, it wasn't like that, the Ice Caps are the number two seed playing, a bad number seven. They're 15-3-1-1, coming since the beginning of March. So these guys are hot. And the Ice Caps were inconsistent. So, you really do have the makings of a very even series going forward.
Well, one X factor for the Ice Caps is goaltender Eddie Pasquale, who was on the AHL all-rookie team. He stopped 35 of 37 yesterday. So, it's encouraging signs for his development.
No, just the way the Crunch, as you alluded to, Dave, the way the Crunch came out of the regular season, I think you said something like they won 17 of their last 20 games, just an amazing record and the momentum they had coming out of the regular season. It's surprising. I was frankly surprised that St. John's was able to go into Syracuse and steal a win in that first game.
Well, one other development with the St. John's Ice Caps is after the Barry Colts were eliminated last week, Mark Scheifele, the number one draft pick in the 2011 entry draft for the Winnipeg Jets, was assigned by the team to St. John's. Now, they elected to send him to directly to St. John's as opposed to New York, which would indicate that he's probably going to get a little time to rest before, seeing any possible practice time.
And that's a good move. He's played 13 playoff games. His first series went 6 games. The second series against the Ottawa 67s went to that 7th game. He was putting in huge ice time in every one of those games, being a leader on that team. It's a great move for them to let him rest a little bit.
Not only let him rest, but the kid's 18, 19 years old. I mean, moving to a city far east like St. John's, never been there before, you need time to get used to, the people you're going to be working with, the rink you're skating at, really, and you're just helping him adjust easier so when he comes into play, he'll be ready to play.
The series was on TSN 1290 last night, if you got a chance to listen. It was a pretty good coverage, as you, Brian Rogers, it was quite exciting.
Oh, he was great. I love the accent and the inclination in his voice. He's got so much passion. It's great.
Yeah, it should be, the Ice Caps have really been interesting. We've covered them on illegalcurve.com, which we actually haven't even mentioned today, but we've covered them all season long in our morning papers because we think it's as important, well, not maybe not as important, but it's extremely important for people to know what's happening down on the farm. Yes. What's happening with our farm club?
If you didn't know who Spencer Mihajlovic was, he comes into Winnipeg, plays, 10 games for the Jets, has 9 points, is a +9. You need to know who these guys are because they're the ones who are going to be filling roles on the team in the very near future.
Well, especially with the Jets out now, I mean, it's easy to follow. Mihajlovic is probably going to get a better shot at a roster, maybe Maxwell too. So, your team is out, but it gives you something else to follow. And I'm honestly thinking about getting an Ice Caps jersey now.
Really?
I get Mahacek one. He's their leading scorer.
But what happens if he's wearing a Jets jersey next
week? If you're wearing an Ice Caps jersey at the MGM Center, you'll blend right in. They're the same colors.
That's true. That is true. Good point.
That's
okay.
A good-looking uniform.
Well, we're going to move from the AHL talk to back to the NHL. Talk about the playoffs, everything that's going on, 2012 playoffs. But we're going to go to a break. So you're listening to the Leave Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I'm your host, David Manuk, filling in for Drew Mandel. And to my left are Darren Bombing and Michael Remus. It's half past the hour right now, and we're going to... Well, you might not know that music, but that is the Nashville Ghoul song that they play. I believe, is that Tim McGraw?
Oh, little Tim McGraw. They're playing in Nashville. So and they're liking it, and they're loving it at Bridgestone Arena.
Is that the name of the song?
Well, that's the name of the arena, Bridgestone Arena. But
liking and loving it.
Oh, this is I like it, I love it.
There you go.
There you go. So, I mean, I'm not a country music fan, so this is a little bit out of my my area. But let's talk about that series, because that series has been fantastic. The Nashville-Detroit series, which obviously came to a conclusion last night. Nashville held off Detroit despite a flurry of opportunities. Hudler almost had a chance to tie it up. Zetterberg had some chances. And it was funny because, you know, I was messaging with the guys who are in Kentucky right now. You know, they're there for Drew's wedding, which we haven't even mentioned Drew's wedding yet.
Congratulations, Drew.
Well, I don't know if I'd say congratulations, but the point is we were messaging and there was only about, you know, 3.5 seconds left to go in the game. And he's, you know, they're like, oh, it's over. And, you know, funny thing is with the NHL, it's never over.
It's never
and,
over.
And as we saw
over.
With the malfunction gate in the Boston-Washington game, it might not necessarily only be 3.5 seconds.
Yeah, so, it might throw an extra 5.5 on there.
There you go. So the Nashville-Detroit series came to a conclusion yesterday. Is that the end of Nick Lidstrom's career?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
you know,
what do you think?
That's the big question. With Detroit, you never know if they're... I don't think this is a breakdown rebuild type of franchise. I think they have the ability to continue a consistent growth curve, if you will. I think it's really up to Nick Lidstrom. You know, he was put in another great season, another Norris-type season, consistent throughout the year, and hopefully I'd like to see him return. Who wouldn't?
I think this is the only series he's ever played, a playoff series, where he didn't register at least 1 point, and I think he finished two behind Steve Yzerman for the all-time Red Wings franchise lead and 12th all-time. I mean, he's just a phenomenal player. He's just unbelievable. And he's completely... You know, it's interesting because when I was in Detroit, I had an opportunity to do post-game with the Red Wings. And it's amazing to me because he's not a big guy. He's completely unassuming, really nice. And you don't... You're shocked. And like I said, you expect huge bruising guys, and he's not like that. So, you know, he's consistent. He's been fantastic for the Detroit Red Wings. He still plays at a high level. Love to see him come back. Michael, what do you think?
He's 42 years old. You know, you've been thinking for a while that maybe the wheels are going to fall off, but he's as fit as they come. He's able to bring it every night. He's won 4 Stanley Cups. Maybe he wants to hang it up. Maybe he doesn't have much to play for, but I think with hockey players, there's always that competitive drive that will keep bringing you back.
Well, you look at that locker room, there's a lot of guys that are getting up to that upper echelon in age, Bertuzzi, Zetterberg, Datsyuk. I think if, you know, the friendship bonds that he's made with those other teammates of his, if they all want to come back and you know, make another push next year, I think, you know, it's very well that he may. He's such a cerebral player, like you said, very, you know, non-assuming, typical Swedish-type defender, but such a smart... you know, hockey sense driven player. He could probably play another season or two if he wanted to.
The carrot, if you will, for getting Nick Lidstrom back, and there's a big one, is called the Winter Classic at the Big House in Ann Arbor, Michigan. 110,000 hockey fans, Detroit, Toronto. That's a pretty big carrot. That's a pretty big lure to try and get him back into the fold, because I can tell you, those games are insane. And if we think that the Winter Classic has been, you know, in the baseball parks, which, you know, have, I mean, what, Reem, you know better.
Like 40,000?
Yeah, 40,000 fans. This is 110,000 fans going insane. It will be the biggest party for the NHL's ever seen.
You really think that one game, I mean, this guy's played, you know, over 1,000 games. He's going deep into the playoffs every year. I mean, he's 42, but he's played more games than, you know, your average.
Yep.
You know, they have playoff runs every season. But I don't know if one game and maybe, you know, the HBO 24/7 special is enough to lure him. I don't know if he's that type of guy.
I don't know. I'm not saying it is or it isn't. I just think that it is one possible incentive to for him when he's factoring in, because he said himself last night in post-game interviews, he said, I'm not going to make a decision right now. Very similar to what Timo Solani said. I'm not making a decision right now. It's too fresh. There's no point in even having this conversation. So the reality is that we know that he's not going to make a decision tomorrow. But when he's reflecting on why are my, what are my pros and cons? Why do I want to play? Why do I not want to play? That will be one of the factors, I think, in why he would want to play.
Well, you look at the discussions we had with Jim Slater this year in the Jets locker room, and one of his greatest memories of his hockey career is playing in front of 100,000 fans in that great game between Michigan State and Michigan at the same, the Big House, as they call it, in Lansing, Michigan. This is an opportunity for Nick Lidstrom to do something that he's, that not a lot of players get the opportunity to. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's won multiple Norris trophies. He's won the Conn Smythe. This is a chance for him to accomplish something and do something that not every player gets an opportunity to. So it's a huge carrot.
So then I guess the question that, that Red Wings fans are going to have to ask themselves is, are the Red Wings going to blow this team up? I mean, as you said, Darren, the team is getting older. So the question I have it to Michael is, what is the Detroit prognosis? Because Mike Babcock in his postgame press conference said, we finished out of the playoffs, second round, first round. Now, a lot of teams would be ecstatic for that sort of consist, you know, to at least get to the playoffs, make the next round. But in Detroit, the expectations are always higher. So what do you think? Is it time to blow this team up, or are they going to stand pat, maybe just add one or two pieces?
Yeah, I don't think it's time to blow things up. I definitely think they have a number of pieces. They do have a strong goaltender in Jimmy Howard. They still have Datsyuk and Zetterberg. And I really think that their issue is maybe they don't have the depth. I mean, when they were winning Stanley Cups, you know, Dan Cleary was more of a third, fourth line guy, and now he's playing first line minutes for them. So, you know, they can, you know, Ken Holland, he's a good general manager. He knows how to work the salary cap, knows how to, you know, finagle a few trades in there. I think they'll do something to improve their club for next season.
The but we've talked a lot about the team that lost the series, but what about the team that won the series? I mean, this team's been the model of consistency. They've had the same GM, the same coach for the last, you know, 14 years or 13 years. So they've been fantastic. They look like they're going to get Hal Gill back. He was a game-time decision for Game 5, so luckily for them, they'll have a few days off at least for him to recover. And, you know, what has been your impressions of Nashville? They've played, you know, some really solid hockey. And, Darren, what do you think about the Predators so far?
You got to start with the goaltender. Pekka Rinne has been phenomenal the entire series. Nashville, you know, everybody knew they were loading up. When the trade deadline came along, they went and got the other Kostitsyn brother. They went and, you know, were able to finagle Radulov out of the KHL, which was a, you know, a huge addition to them, obviously getting the game-winning goal last night. Yeah, I think Nashville is truly gearing up for a deep run. And with Rene and Nett, you can't count them out.
You know, I picked Nashville as my Stanley Cup to make the finals this year of the Western Conference, not to toot my own horn or anything, even though I just did. But I really like Nashville. Pekka Rinne, he's a tall goaltender. Detroit fired a lot of shots at him, but it seems that he doesn't have any holes. They're very deep, very good defensively. You know, when you have Weber and Suter, it really reminds me of when the Ducks had Pronger and Niedermeyer. That's two all-star, bona fide, shutdown defensemen who can also provide offense. And I, you know, I like Nashville. You know, there was a great crowd last night. I hope that they make a run.
The interesting thing about the Predators is that they do it with guys who aren't necessarily household names. I mean, if you look, the leading scorer for the for that series was Gabriel Bork. He had 3 goals and 4 points. I mean, they're not getting it done with guys who are, you know, a Datsyuk, a Zetterberg. Everybody knows their name. You know, this is a team that's put together. It's a very cohesive group. You know, you've got the, like Rima said, you've got the Kostitsyn brothers. It's been a great, you know, they've done a really nice thing here in Nashville. They pushed the second round last year. Now they're in the second round again this year. But is this the year they take the jump? Now, like similar to Remus, I didn't pick them to make the Stanley Cup Finals, but I do have them in another pool. So if the Predators make a run, I won't be upset about it. But it's really interesting to see how this team has you know, gelled. And the interesting thing also is that they knew that this was the year they kind of had to. They've got all these, you know, restricted free agents, unrestricted free agents. They had to make a decision. You know, will Suter be back next year? Will Weber? Will Rennie? You know what I mean? Like, they needed to know that these guys had to know that this team was serious about making a run at the Stanley Cup.
You know, Nashville's a team that scores by committee. Martin Erat was their leading scorer this year with a modest 60 points. Patrick Hornqvist is becoming a young Thomas Holmstrom in front of the net. They got Paul Gostad on the third and fourth lines digging out those faceoffs. You know, they're a deep team. Everyone chips in offensively. You know, as you said, Gabriel Bork, you know, the rookie coming out of nowhere. I like Nashville, and I, again, hope they do well. And nice to see a Southern team succeed.
I've been impressed with David Legwand. This guy was very unassuming for the majority of his career. He's really matured and grown into that veteran presence that a team like this needs. They're a relatively young team, and like you said, they score by committee. But David Legwand, 2 goals, 2 assists in this series in 5 games. You know, this guy knows how to distribute the puck, and he's been that veteran leader that they need.
Now, the other interesting thing was there was a Winnipeg Jets element at the arena last night. Did anybody catch the Winnipeg Jets fan wearing a Jets jersey behind the Predators bench?
Yeah, the guy right behind the Predators bench, and everyone's wearing yellow.
Yeah.
It's like a sea of yellow. Like, some people may call it, not the nicest looking color.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it, but
it's
there's
distinctive.
This blue.
Yeah.
Blue Jets jersey, old Jets jersey.
Yeah, Jets 1.0.
Jets 1.0. Well, the guy was celebrating very heavily at the end. So maybe he's, I don't know, what, he's from Nashville or Atlanta?
Well,
fan?
Apparently, now, this I did a little digging this morning because we had someone at tweet us. He's apparently a transplanted Winnipegger.
Oh, really?
Who might teach out in like somewhere in the southern U.S. and goes to obviously all the Nashville games. So it was interesting. It was just funny, though, because I saw that when I was in Detroit. I saw a lot of guys would wear the old school Jets 1.0 jerseys, and it was just interesting to note that there's a guy at this, you know, like Rima said, in a sea of yellow,
right.
And this guy's wearing this really old school blue, really distinctive, and behind, of course, the Manitoba native.
I think it's so great that there's been, a growth of this fan base in Nashville. This is something that the NHL really wanted to do, is establish these southern markets, and it's one that succeeded a lot, like the San Jose Sharks and some other markets like that, Tampa Bay Lightning and the like. I think it's so great when the Jets played their last regular season in Nashville. That was Nashville's franchise record-breaking 22nd sellout of their arena. And I think it's great because this is a good young team, and they've got, you know, the bright future ahead of them.
Okay, well, you know, we finished the Nashville-Detroit series, and now we're going to go to break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Welcome back to the program. David Minuk here as your host, Darren Bomming, Michael Remus. You can follow us on illegalcurve.com, which is where we have all the Jets news as well as the playoff news. We're covering both because it's a little sparse when it comes to Jets news, as well as Ice Caps. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve and like us on Facebook. Ezra Ginsberg loves it when people like us on Facebook. So please try and do that as best you can. Just going back to the last segment quickly for 1 second, if you're looking to see the picture of the fan who's wearing the Jets jersey, we have him on today's morning papers on illegalcurve.com. So you can check that out, and you'll be up to speed as to what we were just talking about.
Jets fans are everywhere.
Can we get this guy as a guest on the show, you think?
Well, we're pretty close. I mean, I've narrowed the search down for him. I think I've got, I know what general vicinity he lives in, so we'll maybe be getting him on.
Well, the boys are in Kentucky. Can't they just swing through Tennessee and bring him on the way back home?
If it's south of the Mason-Dixon line, I'm sure that they'll be fine. They'll be able to find him somehow. But you know what? There's a lot of NHL game action tonight. In fact, on TSN 1290, you'll be able to listen to the Senators-Rangers game tonight. So tune in for that. That'll be a lot of fun if you're driving in the car or you're at home and you want to listen. You want to catch that game on the air. Give it a listen. Starts at 7 o'clock Eastern. So
come
6
on,
o'clock.
Dave.
Sorry, 6 o'clock our time. But let's talk about the game that starts at 2 o'clock here in Winnipeg, Washington and Boston. Game 5, huge game. What do you guys think, Reem? What are your expectations?
Very pumped for this one. I thought Boston controlled a lot of the play in the last game, but Braden Holtby stood on his head. I'm curious to see if he can keep it up.
Darren?
I can't say enough about this young goaltender. I was very surprised, as I said in the last segment, that when you get a young goaltender coming in to a playoff series, you never know what you're going to get. But it seems like that same storyline every year, a young goaltender comes in and making some noise, making a splash, if you will. This has been a great series. 1-goal games throughout, and with the series 2-2, game 5, this is the big one, I think.
Well, it was interesting. Mike Johnson, I think, on TSN after the game was talking about whether there was an injury concern for Ovechkin, because he did only play 1:58 in the third period of game 4. And although what was interesting, actually, was that I think it was Green and Semin only played, like, they both, every Washington Capitals player played over 3 minutes, except with the exception of those 3 players. They all played under.
In the third period. I know Dale Hunter did that in Winnipeg. I know he played Jay Beagle for a lot of ice time. And for whatever reason, he seems to like Jay Beagle, maybe trust him more defensively. And that's the way he's playing his guys.
That's what they do. He justifies it as he says they're shot blockers and they're grinders and they're going to, you know, be able to really hold the series that way. So that's why it's interesting to see Hunter's coaching style.
The shot blocking in the playoffs, honestly, every time a guy gets in front of a shot to block it, I can't believe it. These guys are nuts.
I mean, it blows your mind because you're thinking to yourself, you're going to get killed. When you see like a Shea Weber wind up his cannon and fire, and you're thinking to yourself, how are you getting in front of that? But that's why we're behind the mic and not on the ice.
That's why they make the big bucks.
Well, Darren, you make the big bucks
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, but, sure.
The next game after that is New Jersey at Florida. Our, as Remus calls it, the series that nobody is watching.
I actually stole that from RP. He said, who's watching this series? But honestly, it has been a few decent good games. New Jersey's taking the play to Florida sometimes. Florida has answered back by responding in that, I guess it was game three? Sure, why not? Game three,
yep.
Where they made that comeback. So, you know, it starts half an hour before the Ottawa game, so you can watch half an hour of it.
I'm really excited to talk to Matt Lachlan about this, especially about Marty Brodeur. The fact that he was pulled in Game 3 after three goals in you know, just over a period of play. You know, he's that emotional veteran leader on this team, and to pull him so early in that game, I'm really wondering if New Jersey's going to be able to respond from that. Obviously, a 4-0 win in Game 4 was a response, but are they going to be able to sustain it? Because this Florida team is, you know, surprising, especially their power play. New Jersey had the top penalty kill in the regular season, and Florida's been able to come in there, and I think they were 8-for-13 at one point.
As you just alluded to, we will be having Matt Lachlan up in about 15 minutes time. He's the play-by-play voice of the New Jersey Devils,
and he's watched every minute. So
yeah, and we've had a chance. We interacted with him when he was in Winnipeg. Great guy. So he'll have a lot of insight into that series. The 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Winnipeg start time between the Ottawa and New York Rangers. Again, you can listen to that game on TSN 1290. What do you think, Reem? What are you expecting from that game?
You know, I'm expecting, you know, what we've seen so far from this series, you know, a defensive battle by the Rangers trying to contain Erik Karlsson. I think we'll see some great goaltending and a lot of scoring, but like a lot of scoring chances, but a lot of them are going to be saved.
No, another goaltending battle. I keep bringing the goaltending up, but that's essentially what I've always seen as the important factor in these playoff series. But these two goaltenders are, you know, Anderson and Lundqvist. Anderson, another surprising goaltender. He's really, you know, shut down Gaborik and Richards and a lot of these guys that were able to put up the offense for the Rangers this year. But the interesting thing is the Senators have never led in this series. Other than the games they've won, they've never had a handle on this series. And the Rangers, you know, being number one in the Eastern Conference at the end of the regular season, this is anybody's series right now.
Unlike in the Pittsburgh and Philly series, this is one of the lowest scoring. This is on the opposite end of the spectrum, whereas that one, I think, has a combined 50 goals. These two teams have combined for 17. So not many were expecting defensive hockey from Washington, but they seem to have found some sort of defensive effort. And you know, it's coming out. I mean, maybe it's just Holtby, but the reality is that they've scored 17 combined goals between these two teams.
I think they scored 17 goals in any other night in Pittsburgh or Philadelphia. Really getting spoiled by that series. There's so many goals. You know, you turn on a great played series like the Ottawa-New York or like Detroit-Nashville, and you're watching them. There's a lot of chances, but you're like, Where are the goals? Where is the excitement? Yeah. It's really two different types of hockey.
It's edge of your seat hockey either way. If you love high scoring, then you love watching that Pittsburgh Philly game because literally you can't go to the bathroom, you can't go anywhere, you can't go get a drink because you're literally going to miss the puck gets dropped at center, the other team is going to score or the same team will score. But it's been that quick in that game. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got the more calculated chess style game where it's still exciting. You know, the hockey's still exciting, but they're playing a little bit more of a different style. And so it's interesting to watch really both. And the truth is, I don't like when people tell you this isn't playoff hockey. The truth is, if you like it, then that's good. And if you've got a majority of fans who like one and a majority of fans who like other, but personally, I like it all. I like seeing both styles of game. It's interesting to watch. I mean, it's like, you know, it's just exciting. The playoffs have just been exciting across the board.
I'll be interested to see in the later rounds when you'll get the solid goaltending of a Lundqvist or an Anderson or a Holtby, or a Brodeur going against, one of these offensive teams like whoever comes out of that Pittsburgh-Philly series. But if, you got the, upper echelon of offensive talent in the entire NHL in that Pittsburgh-Philly series in Giroux and Staal and Malkin and Crosby and Hartnell. These guys are continuing to, score goals. Now I'm waiting for those later series when you get, one of those goaltenders who's, playing such a great playoff, such a great playoff season matched up against that offensive skill.
Make sure you guys are at our listeners are at tweeting us at Illegal Curve. And letting us know who you think, whether you like high-scoring games, low-scoring games. If you're enjoying the playoffs, we want to hear from you. The next game is the San Jose-St. Louis game. And that one it's really interesting because San Jose has broken my heart every year. Every year I think this is going to be the year that San Jose is going to do it. I take them. I think this is going to be the year. And they fall short. So what do you guys think? St. Louis, Darren, earlier in the, when we opened up, you were talking about how you think that San Jose could possibly come back. So what are your thoughts about this game tonight?
Well, they just have that veteran core. They've been there before. They've made deep pushes into the playoffs before. Yes, they've always essentially inevitably let people down when you think they're, this is their year. Joe Thornton's got, his group together. But, being down 3-1 to a young St. Louis Blues team, they play such, like I was saying earlier, they play such a systematic defensive game. It may not be the most exciting hockey to watch, but it's tough to beat a team like St. Louis because they have so much speed and discipline that it's going to be tough for San Jose to come back.
St. Louis is heading back home for this one. I really think that they're going to put it away here. San Jose has been having trouble scoring the last couple of games. They had a lot of pressure at the end of the last game, but Brian Elliott and Halak too when he's in there, but Elliott right now is the guy, has stood on his head, made the saves when he's had to. The Blues are very well coached by Ken Hitchcock. They're all bought in, so I think that the Blues are going to take it tonight.
Well, we'll have an opportunity to talk to Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch to get his take on the series, the Blues and Sharks.
Always has great insight, Jeremy. Met him here. He came in, said hello. One of the nicest guys in sports media.
Well, this is the nicest thing one of the nicest things about the Jets' return is that, we've had the show for a number of years and had the opportunity to speak to, a ton of beat writers. But you always speak to them, you never really meet them in person because, of course, they never came to Winnipeg. There was no reason for them to. But now, because we've had a full season of NHL hockey back in the city, we've had an opportunity to meet just a ton of guys that we've had, that we've had on the radio, and they're all extremely nice and really knowledgeable about the game. They know, a lot of these guys have been covering the game for years, and their length of knowledge is unbelievable. The final series, we're going to Phoenix, the whiteout, the borrowed tradition from Winnipeg. It still bothers people that the tradition has been taken from the Peg, but the whiteout, it could be seeing the first series win in the history of that franchise. Well, it depends on the way you look at the history, but it would be the first series win since in the franchise history since 87.
Right.
But it would be the first, obviously, in Phoenix. So how significant is this game tonight in Glendale?
Huge game. Come on. Those Coyotes fans are finally going to be coming out. There's not going to be any empty seats there, we'd like to think. But Coyotes are going to win, or hopefully should win this game tonight, and maybe the new owner, will have a nice investment on his hands.
No, a lot of people don't like the whiteout, but I think it's just a tradition continued on. The Winnipeg Jets 2.0 have continued a lot of traditions that the Atlanta Thrashers had. I think it's a good thing that the whiteout's continued, but like you said, the fans are going to be in the seats. The big marketing push has happened. They're selling out these playoff games, which I think is great. But as far as the actual games go, Phoenix has scored 3 goals in all 4 of these games. So with Mike Smith in net and the way he's been playing, 3 goals is really all you need. I don't see Mike Smith letting in, having a 4-goal game. I think Chicago has kept all these games close and scored late, but Phoenix seems to have a stranglehold on this one.
I think there's if Corey Crawford's played last few games, I think they may or may not start him this game. We'll stay tuned to that one.
There's definitely some talk about Ray Emery making his playoff reemergence. All right, well, that's enough for today's games. We're going to head to break. And on the other side of the break, we're going to have Matt Lachlan, the New Jersey Devils play-by-play. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your guest host, David Manuk. I'm joined in studio by Darren Bauming and Michael Remus.
Yeah, start it up, Dave.
I'm trying to start it up. This is some good times. Our first hour is over. How are you feeling after the first hour, Darren?
I feel great.
You know, you're with the B-side, the line two grouping.
Yeah, the B-team, the better team.
Yeah, the better team is what Remus and I like to think of. But the AlleleCurve.com site is where you can find a lot of myself and Remus's postings. And you can follow us on Twitter at AlleleCurve. And like I said before, please like us on Facebook. Ezzy's always excited when that happens.
You know, I've been working up quite a sweat the first hour. I'm going to need to bring a towel in here, I think.
It's been a lot of hard work, a lot of fun. And, you know, before we get to Matt Lachlan, we're going to talk about the Devils and Panthers series. So, you know, Darren, let's talk about it a little bit more. What are you thinking? Is there going to be a rat trick tonight?
A rat trick?
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, Florida's been able to put up, you know, quite a bit of offense in this series. They, you know, they had 4 goals in games 2 and 3. Obviously, that game 3 where they had to pull Marty Brodeur, you know, about 2 minutes into the second period, seemed to really shake them. But what a rebound game in game 4 for New Jersey to come out and you know, hand them a 4-0 loss. This has been a more interesting series than I thought it was going to be. I'm curious to see what happens in Game 5 because it's kind of been back and forth.
Well, you know, it's interesting if you really want to talk about a catalyst as to what may have caused a power outage is that there was no Garrison for the Panthers, right? So, like, you lose him and your power play, which was like, I think they were, they had an unbelievable power play percentage in the first 3 games.
Yeah.
They went 0-for-6. In
right.
Game 4.
Right.
So, I mean, that really is a testament to what his impact is quarterbacking that power play.
Well, Kevin Dineen said in the morning skate today that Jason Garrison, he's cautiously optimistic that he'll be back in the lineup. And we saw Garrison here for 3 games. That guy's got a
cannon
of a slap shot. You know, had a franchise high goals this season for a defenseman with 16. And just, you know, the threat of a defenseman with that type of shot on the power play gives you a lot of options and it gives the defense more to think about.
Fleischman and Garrison were both missing from the morning skate today, but Fleischman also skipped the morning skate on game 4 and is expected to start to play, so that shouldn't impact them too badly. And then they've also got it looks like Jose Theodore will be the projected starter for tonight for the Panthers, so that should be an interesting one.
I think both of these Panthers goaltenders are capable. When Scott Clemenson was called into action against the Jets earlier this year, I was impressed with this guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's been a backup essentially his entire career, obviously behind Marty Brodeur for quite a few years in New Jersey, but now he gets to play against his old team, or had a chance to play against his old team. And I think if I was head coach of the Florida Panthers, I would have Clemenson between the pipes.
It's interesting, actually. He played that one game where he was just on top of his head. Like, the Jets couldn't get a thing past him.
Nope.
And so he's a very interesting, you know, candidate for the position. But, you know, it looks like they're opting to go back with Theodore, who has the playoff experience.
Right.
And, you know, they called up Tyson Straka, so that should be an interesting one. And then what's really interesting, actually, is the fact that they've got another Steven Gionta, who, for the Devils, who's been playing an extremely interesting, you know, upbeat role for that team.
Yeah, he's an undrafted free agent out of college, Brian Gionta's younger brother. He really looks like a Gionta out there, and he's providing a bit of a spark on the third line for the Devils.
The question I have, though, is the play of Kovalchuk. Like, is he ready to step up? The Devils need him to be, you know, you've got Eliash, you've got Zajac. Is Kovalchuk ready to really start, you know, throwing it down? Because they need more than just 2 goals out of him this playoff.
Well, we've looked at the numbers yesterday as far as shots on goal went, and I think Kovalchuk has 9 shots on goal, and you look at Zach Parise, he's got 20 shots on goal.
Mm-hmm.
Who's supposed to be your number one goal scorer? It's arguable between those two guys, but when Ilya Kovalchuk has 9 shots on goal in 4 games, he obviously needs to step his game up. I don't know if Florida is blocking more of his shots or he's shooting wide, but he's definitely not getting them on net, and he needs to if he wants to be that goal-scoring force he's known to be.
Well, Kovalchuk, you know, last season was his first in New Jersey. Maybe wasn't the best season. There might have been some kind of adjustment period. But this season, he returned to form, and he's looking pretty good. And, you know, good players like Kovalchuk, elite players, I'm not worried about him. I think he'll be able to bring in the next games in this series.
No, he could very well have that breakout game tonight.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that the Winnipegger, Travis Zajac, who missed a number of games during the regular season,
mm-hmm.
is currently the leading scorer for the Devils. So it's interesting to see how he's managed to come back, and we'll talk to Matt about that. The other thing of real note for this series after Marty Brodeur was pulled was the fact that he came back and had a shutout.
Right.
And that shutout was his 24th in the playoffs and moved him past Patrick Roy for into number one all-time in the playoff books. So, I mean, the guy just, you know, he's aging, but, you know, he's still getting the records. And what do you, like, you know, like, are you impressed by him still, or do you think that he just doesn't have enough?
You have to be impressed with this guy. He's always been a consistent goaltender. He's never had those off nights. He's starting to see those off nights happen once in a while. It's come with his age, but, you know, when you're able to still shut out a playoff team, you know, shut out someone in the playoffs and obviously take that number one spot over Patrick Roy, you know, he's essentially establishing himself as that number one goaltender, arguably, of all time.
You know, not only is Marty Brodeur known for stopping pucks, but he's also pretty good at playing the puck. I think he recorded two assists the other night, bringing his career playoff point total to, I think, one goal and 10 assists. And TSN's Aaron Ward tweeted the other day, "Congratulations, Marty, you've got more career playoff points than I do."
So tonight is of course, Game 5 between the Devils and the Panthers. And the question I have for you guys is, who's going to win tonight? What's your prediction, Darren?
I like the Devils. I think they came out a little bit cold in this series, especially in that Game 3, as I talked about, you know, with Brodeur having to be pulled, you know, allowing 3 goals on 12 shots. But they seem to really bounce back in that last game and, you know, coming back to New Jersey for this game, correct? Yeah, I think it's in their favor. I really like New Jersey. No, it's in Florida.
In Florida tonight.
Okay, my mistake. But coming back with that 4-0 win in Game 4, I think it's really swung the momentum in their favor. So I like the Devils in this series.
I think it really depends. I think a lot depends on Jason Garrison. We saw the impact missing him had last game. If he doesn't play, I still think the Panthers can win. But I picked the Devils to win this series, and I'm going to go with the Devils again tonight.
So the question is, will I break the deadlock? Will I go? You went with the...
I went with the Devils.
You went with the Devils? Oh, so there is no deadlock. It's two potentially against, you know, one, but I actually think the Devils will win, too.
I think the sweep across the board here.
I think the Devils are, you know, they're playing a little bit more, as you said, consistent. What's interesting, actually, about this series, about every game in the series, is that one team or the other has started with a 3-0 lead.
Right.
And then, you know, it hasn't necessarily been overcome, but it's always to the point where it's close. And so it's been really interesting. I expect one team to score 3 goals, and then we'll have a game. Because that's essentially what happened.
You know what happened to me last game? They scored 3 goals, and there's so many games on at once. I changed the channel, and next thing I know, I'm reading on Twitter, Florida, not only did they tie it, but they came back, and I was watching one of the other exciting playoff games.
That'll wrap up the Devils and Panthers series. We're going to try and get Matt Lachlan on the phone, the play-by-play voice of the New Jersey Devils, and we'll be back with the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm David Minuk, filling in for Drew Mandel. To my left is Darren Bomming, sitting in Ezra Ginsberg's seat. And to his left is Michael Remus, sitting in Richard Pollock's seat, while the rest of the guys are lounging about in Kentucky. And not only are they in Kentucky, they're doing what I love to do, which is they're at the horse races. They're at Keeneland Horse Track in Kentucky. I think it's in Lexington. And they're there for the nuptials of Drew Mandel, the host of the show. And the guys, Drew's taking his friends to an afternoon of horse racing. So it should be quite eventful for the boys down in Kentucky.
Have you heard? Are they laying some dollars down on the ponies?
I haven't heard anything. We have no updates. But as long as we're not getting any, you know, things that Ezra has done anything wrong, we're happy. That's our...
Well, as long as they didn't let Ezra drive on the highway, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, that's probably... I think you have experience going to the draft with Ezra, so...
I've driven to Minneapolis. I've driven to Grand Forks with Ezra. You know, the one thing about him is in the hotel room, he snores. And I talked to Richard. He got no sleep this week at all.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, you know, that's a little record for anyone who's ever going to do that with Ezra Ginsberg. But let's talk.
I'll keep that in mind.
Let's talk some hockey. Let's go to the next series. We're still trying to get Matt Lachlan on the phone, but we'll go to the next series, which is the Philadelphia Pittsburgh series. Probably the best series if you like high scoring games.
It's the one everyone's talking about.
There was only five goals in game five, and you know, people were really disappointed because they thought, why the let-up? Why are there only 5 goals?
Where did this goaltending come from?
Why suddenly is your goals against wanting to improve? So what do you guys think so far? Your preliminary thoughts on the series?
I'm happy that the chippiness, the stick work, the cheap stuff, you know, everyone talking about Crosby knocking the glove away, You know, obviously the cross checks to the face, all this sort of face washing and garbage. It has its time and place, but it got way, way out of hand in this series. It's nice that they're down to playing some hockey. It's nice that they're down to playing some defensive hockey, because 8-5, 8-4, 10-3, those games there, that was a ridiculous amount of goals. Entertaining to watch, but back to a little bit more of a reasonable score, 3-2 in game five.
You know, coming out of the gate, I think everyone in the league was excited. Oh, it's playoffs. We got to pick up the intensity. We got to cross-check guys in the face. You know, my favorite is the face wash. But they toned it down. They're playing some hockey. You know, I want to say I read a great article the other day. You know, part of the reason the Flyers' defense may not be as good as expected is, you know, Chris Pronger, who's been out really since that time he played here in Winnipeg. And he's been out with concussion. And Bruce Arthur wrote a great article in the National Post, you know, detailing, you know, the issues he's had with concussions. You know, he stayed away from the team, hasn't really been going to practices, going to games. You know, the light and the noise really is having an effect on him. And it's kind of sad. Like, his kids, you know, don't really quite understand, you know, what's going on. You know, they say, you know, Daddy, when are you going to be playing hockey? And he just says, you know, don't ask me that. So really difficult time for, you know, probably Hall of Famer Chris Pronger.
And amazingly, you know, I mean, obviously the fact is the scoring has been up, but the Flyers are still up. You know, you're still up 3-2. The series is, you're still in control. You're going back to your barn. The expectation is that Philadelphia should be able to close out one of the final two games, although going back to Pittsburgh, if you're tied, you know, 3-3, that's going to be very problematic.
Gary Lawless said it perfectly yesterday on HNL on the show there. Coming back to Pittsburgh for the game last night was huge for them. He picked Pittsburgh. He thought Pittsburgh would win that game. He was correct. And he essentially, you know, rounded it out perfectly, is that it's, you know, it's likely going to go seven games, possibly six, but it's essentially the home team that has the advantage in whichever game they might be playing.
You know, the truth is that the Flyers have to increase their five-on-five play, because they have 14, they scored 25 goals this series and have 14 on the special teams. They have 11 on the power play, and their power play is insane right now. They've got 11 for, they were at, before game five, they were hitting 60%. They were 9-for-15, and they went 2-for-5 in game five, and now they're 11-for-20. So a 55% power play percentage is insane, and then couple that with three shorthanded goals. So they have 14 special team goals and 11 right goals 5-on-5. So that's, you can't do that. You have to increase your, I mean, it's good to have your power play clicking, but you got to increase the regular 5-on-5 play right now.
You know, the Flyers have really victimized the depleted Pittsburgh defense corps, which really isn't the same as we talked about last week. It's not the same as their Stanley Cup team. They're missing a bit of that grit, and they've, you know, Philly is really taking advantage. You know, Jagr, while he's not, you know, as fast as he was, but he's strong on the puck, makes smart decisions, and him, Giroux, and Hartnell are probably the number one line in hockey right now.
No question. Jaromir Jagr, nobody knew really what to expect with him signing in Philadelphia this year, but like you said, very strong on the puck, still demands a lot of respect when he's carrying the puck, because once in a while he'll pull out one of those dirty dangles a la, you know, mid-1990s and surprise everybody. But yeah, definitely, you know, some of the best players in the game on that line.
Continuing with that power play theme, the 11 goals that the Flyers have scored on the power play equals a franchise playoff record set in 1989. Does anybody know what team they set it against?
Oh, wow. The Capitals?
I know it's not going to be the Jets, but it just seems like every significant record is against the Jets. At least every one of Gretzky's.
No, it is against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Wow.
A series that went seven games.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's interesting because they should eclipse that based on, you know, what's going to happen in the next game. But, you know, it's interesting that only three teams have ever come back from a 3-0 deficit: the 42 Leafs, the 75 Islanders, and the 2010 Flyers. So do you guys think that the Pittsburgh Penguins could be on that list?
I think so. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury had a huge bounce-back game last night. It's really up to him. I said it earlier in the show. I thought he was going to be the X factor in this series, because I have not been impressed with Ilya Bryzgalov, especially after that first half of the season. You know, but he continued to say in post-game scrums that the playoffs is what matters. And really, he didn't show up at all once the playoffs started. I think Marc-Andre Fleury is continuing to be that X factor, because he seems to have smartened up. I know it's only one game, but if he's able to play sharp in the next two, and you know, Pittsburgh's power play is no slouch either. They're putting, you know, when you got guys like Steve Sullivan and Chris Kunitz, each with two power play goals, you know, anybody is scoring on the power play right now for Pittsburgh, and I think they have a chance to win that Game 7 and get to that Game 7 with a win in Game 6.
It's interesting, actually. I was one of the – I picked at our in our preseason predictions pool. I picked the Flyers. I thought Brizgalov would be spectacular, and I thought the Flyers, that's what they needed. They finally had the bona fide, you know, goaltender that they've always kind of needed, and they were going to get he was going to put them over the hump and get them to that next level. And his numbers don't really bear that out.
No.
4.54 goals against and an .848 save percentage.
Call Michael Layton, he'll get you to the conference finals.
Well, you know, and I think the Flyers just picked him up off waivers, but the point is that, you know, Brizgalov really, despite the fact that he's amazing after the games. I mean, his post-game interviews are amazing. And one of the post-game interview that Ezra did with him here in Winnipeg after the Jets fans were booing him and cheering, you know, and he said, oh, I like it here in Winnipeg. They cheer me here and they boo me in Philadelphia. I actually thought that was good. Like, I really enjoyed his he's got a pretty good sense of humor. But, I mean, he's a little weird. You know, if you saw the HBO special, you know he's a little bit out there. Not like, you know, he's just a different sort of guy. But I was, I really thought that he'd be able to kind of ratchet it up for the playoffs.
Well, from a marketing standpoint, the NHL has to love a guy like Ilya Brizgalov. Signs the big contract, goes to a big market, coming out of Phoenix, going to Philadelphia. He's such a polarizing figure. Everything he says is essentially controversial in one way or another. And especially with the new market in Winnipeg and the comments he made about, you know, Winnipeg and parks and not having enough parks for his sake and not being a warm enough climate for him and his family. I think it's a great thing. Just like I said, a polarizing figure and somebody that everyone loves to hear what he has to say.
You know, he really has not looked comfortable in the net at all. He's looked pretty terrible, you know, to put it frankly. And it's really interesting to see what's going to happen. He signs a long-term deal in Philly. You know, they think they're getting this goaltender, but he turns out to be, you know, a bit of a nut bar. And he made those bear comments, and then the Pittsburgh fans coming out and bears. You know, this guy, he's pretty hilarious. I'd like to see, you know, Philly has been such an interesting team because of, you know, the 24/7, you know, mostly. You get to really see their personalities. You know, Scott Hartnell from, you know, I know he's on very popular on the Twitter.
Right.
He's got his Hartnell down. Very interesting guy. I really want the Flyers to wrap this one up because I want to see them go far.
The interesting thing is not the leading goal scorer for the series right now is Thunder Bay, Ontario's Jordan Staal. He has 6 goals, 9 points for the Penguins. Claude Giroux leading the series in points, not surprising, because like Remus said, he's been absolutely fantastic all series long. He's just lights out. And as the guys talked about last week, he's top five in the league right now, could argue top three. But it really, to me, it comes down to, and we saw them yesterday, colliding, unfortunately, for Penguins fans, between Crosby and Malkin. How are these guys going to respond? Now, is Crosby, did that hurt Crosby? Because we know, obviously, he came back, he played. But what kind of impact did that hit by big, you know, Malkin have on him?
Well, during the game, I know the announcers were very concerned about Crosby's health at that point. They didn't know if he could, you know, got his bell rung. It seems, you know, you look at Crosby's injuries in the past, and if he just gets his head knocked in a, you know, a very subtle direction, that, you know, he could be concussed again. He seemed to be okay and you know, played out the rest of the game. But, you know, it's really going to take, you know, Game 6 and Game 7, if it gets to that, to see if Crosby's healthy.
Now, is it going to be like this the rest of his career? I mean, every time he bumps a guy on his own team or takes a hit, are we going to be, you know, holding our breath and wondering, oh, is he going to get up? Is he going to be okay? Everyone in, you know, in the country or in the hockey world is so concerned about this guy. It's interesting to see, you know, what's going to happen with how long, you know, what kind of longevity he's going
to
have.
If you made a comparison to, say, football, and you had a 24-year-old running back, Crosby's 24 years old, if you had a 24-year-old running back with multiple knee injuries, you would have to say, I don't see this guy playing too far into the future. Crosby's 24 years old, obviously, you know, one of the best talents in the world in the National Hockey League. And yeah, it's questionable because, you know, he's sat out so much time, and he, you know, only being 24 years old, you're not sure what he's going to be like when he's 28, 29, 30 years old.
Well, you know, I think Remus puts it well. I think that everybody is going to be sitting there waiting for the other shoe to drop and sitting there saying, is this the hit that's going to knock Crosby out of the game forever? But, you know, the problem is you can't play like that. You can't play worried. You can't play afraid. He has to just play like he always has. You know, he's got to play, you know, a little bit of a physical game, a little bit of a chippy game. And you know, if it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. you know, he has to make that determination for himself, for his family, but he's young. So, you know, when you're young, you're foolhardy. You don't think about long-term, you know, ramifications to the, those sorts of hits. So right now you think you're impervious. Nothing is going to ever, you know, sure, I may have been taken down a peg, but I can always bounce back. You don't think about what am I going to be like in, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. So that's the question that Pens fans are going to be wondering as, you know, they watch this, you know, like you said, he's probably the best player in the game right now.
When healthy.
When healthy, of course.
Right.
That, you know, what will happen the next time he gets hit big time?
You know, he made those comments earlier in the week about him not liking the Flyers. And, you know, Flyers fans really took that and ran with it, coming out with T-shirts that say, we don't like you either. You know, some people in the media said, you know, they weren't, you know, Crosby should keep his cool, maybe keep his, you know, mouth shut and act, you know, more professional, more like a captain. But I liked seeing that competitiveness and that fire out of him. He's the captain. He's supposed to be competitive. You're not supposed to like the other team that you're playing against. It's playoff hockey. You want to go out there and not, you know, not murder them, you know, like cross-checking in the face, but, you know, outscore them and win the game.
Well, you look at the way that series was going, especially after that game with, you know, 250 penalty minutes or whatever it was. He needed to show that emotion. He needed to show his teammates that, you know, he's bringing that high emotional level. You know, if he came out and said, oh, you know, it was just another game, it's this or that, and, you know, came out kind of dormant or domicile, you know, he's not motivating his team. He's a young captain, not the youngest in the league, but a young captain on a, you know, a Stanley Cup competing team, and he needs to bring that emotional leadership. And by doing that, you know, or he does that by, you know, bringing it in his post-game comments. I think it was a good move.
If you want to talk about one of the most heated rivalries in the NHL, going back, you know, however many years, it's this, the Battle of Pennsylvania. And it is just so much fun to watch. I mean, when we realized that this was going to be the series that was going to be in the first round series between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, I was ecstatic. I was circling on the calendar, as they say, because this was the series I most wanted to watch because of the history, the teams, the cities hate each other. They're actually fairly far. It's funny, I didn't realize this because I remember when the Penguins were playing Detroit and I was at Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals in Detroit. We had, obviously, there were Penguins fans there, and they drove down, and they actually said that Pittsburgh is actually closer to Detroit than it is to Philadelphia. So it's interesting because it's such a huge state. You don't realize that, you know, most people think these cities are, you know, an hour apart. Or, you know, they're actually fairly significantly apart. But the doesn't diminish the rivalry, the hatred.
Well, it reminds me of, you know, late 90s when you had, you know, Lindros's Flyers against Lemieux's Penguins. They had some epic overtime battles, you know, kind of similar to what we're seeing now. But what we're seeing now is, you know, really elevated the NHL, you know, to the forefront of sports media, you know, given NBC record ratings.
Well, the game tomorrow between the Penguins and the Flyers goes at 1 o'clock Winnipeg time. I mean, sorry, 11 o'clock Winnipeg time. It's going to be just a dandy. And what are your calls? What are your predictions?
I see Pittsburgh bringing this to a Game 7. I think Pittsburgh has a very good chance to win this series. That may not be a popular sentiment, you know, being down 3-0 in that series, but I think they have the potential. I'm calling them to push it to Game 7 and win this series.
Remus?
Well, I predict that today and tomorrow I'm going to be on the couch watching hockey all day. I mean, wow, it's unbelievable, the schedule. But in terms of when, I'm picking Philadelphia. They're at home. They need to close this one out.
I'm also going to go with the Flyers. I think the Philly faithful wearing the Orange Crush are going to push this team to victory. That's all for the Flyers-Penguins segment. You're listening to the Leo Kerb Hockey Show on TSN 1290.